Burton Radio.
I'm Ray Burton, and welcome to another Let's Talk Gardening podcast. Our mission is to provide listeners with interesting, informative topics and up-to-date information. My co-host is Faye Caro, an award-winning gardener, horticulturalist and media presenter. Faye's passion is educating people. Oh, and she loves bugs a lot too. My passion is simply beautiful, healthy gardens. And together, each week, we cover many great gardening subjects.
Saturday mornings come around again, and it's time for Let's Talk Gardening.
And good morning. You are with Ray Burton, and supporting me today is Linda and Paul Michener from Green Life Soil Co. And we're ready to go. Our number is 94841927, and you can send us an email by going to gardening@curtinfm.com.au. Shout out to the cheeky Alan Simons and his very chirpy PA Peter Kelly for kicking off the weekend in nostalgic style and always done with a twist of humour. Our cycling DJ Jim Crinan wrapped up the cycling program just now, and Jim will return for you next Saturday morning. So thank you, boys, very, very much. Okay, you two, how is it? How are you going? It's been a while since I've seen you both.
Yeah, indeed. Good morning, everybody.
I think Kalamunda Garden Festival.
Yes,
and
yes.
And you guys were working
away. That's right.
And you host a marquee.
Yes, yeah, we do. Sponsor one of the marquees, and it's always busy with some very high-quality speakers coming through. And yeah, lots of opportunity to chat to people. And I seem to remember I gave you the task of scoping out the plant stores because I wasn't able to get away and find a few things.
And I begrudgingly did it.
Yeah. I said, you can go shopping with my money. If you like. Yeah. And I did find a couple of ferns in the end. But it was a lovely day.
Yeah, the best place is to go to the Fern Society sales that they have a couple of times a year. Mm. I've just become a member of the Fern Society. And their club, they do it extremely well, and you can actually secure ferns on the day, but their fairs are extremely good.
Well, yeah. I got a couple of very hardy ones, so if I can keep those alive, I'll try and see if I can grow my expertise in that area down the track.
Because I think a lot of us do have that hit and miss relationship with ferns. Mm. You know, some people have that hand, that natural ability to have ferns prosper for them. I have some, but some are trickier than others. And like everything requires its own special conditions and attention. And it's understanding that it's not a one size fits all.
Absolutely. It comes down to the microclimate and all sorts of things. And the amount of maidenhair ferns I've killed, I could.
Yeah. And they are the most beautiful of all.
Yeah.
And I have one that was given to me by a girlfriend, and the genes of that maidenhair come all the way from Kalgoorlie.
Ooh.
She's one tough lady. Mm. And I have no problems. It's just like pride and joy. But I know deep down it's not because of me. It's the variety. It's this particular plant. It's just so tough. I like to think, you know, that it's my hand, but it's not.
Awesome. Yep.
All right, guys, our lines are free, 94841927. We are chatting this morning at 20 past 8 with Stephen Ryan. Haven't had Stephen on the show for 10 years.
Wow.
He's formerly of Gardening Australia TV. You may remember him. He is a horticulturalist and a nurseryman. He has an amazing background and, you know, probably amongst the best knowledge of any horticulturalist in Australia and beyond. He's also the founder of Dicksonia Rare Plant Nursery across there in Melbourne. We're going to hear from him this morning. He's talking about a lady called Alice Rowan and an initiative that he is running with at the moment, and I'll let him discuss that with you and what he's trying to do in memory of this amazing blaze trailing lady. And this is like 100 years on that she passed away. And it's a story that gave me goosebumps, and I think you'll enjoy listening to it as well. We do have some emails to get through, and we're going to be talking today with Linda and Paul coming from Green Life Soil Co. Of course, we're talking about vegetable gardening, permaculture, potting mixes, and much more. I must say potting mix is a bit of a subject at the moment. People aren't necessarily happy with the quality of their potting mixes. What do you guys know about that?
Well, Ray, it seems to come down to the availability of some of the ingredients.
Yes, exactly. So how do you make up for that? What can you do?
There's a whole range of things we can come up with, and we are working on that. But
yeah.
Unfortunately, it does come down to people's perceptions of as well, what they're willing to accept that is in potting mix.
Mm.
It's always been traditionally using pine bark.
Mm.
And we are working on alternatives, different other wood chips, that sort of thing, composted to various degrees. And I believe other companies are as well. But the willingness to accept that, how it looks when it actually comes out.
I don't mind if it looks different as long as it is as effective.
As long as it works.
Well, sometimes it will work, but it will work a little differently.
This is what people need to learn about.
Correct. And some people, believe it or not, do purely judge on the visuals. If they'll open a bag and think, oh, it's not what I've had before.
There's something wrong here.
Definitely. Yeah. And I think it's a case of adapting sometimes to the new formulas because...
Sorry to interrupt you. What are we likely to see that's different when we open our bag now?
There might be a more variation in particle sizes with the wood chip is one thing. The colour, obviously. We do work on that, but it's probably particle size as much as anything, because usually wood chip of any description usually has a fairly consistent pH. It may break down a little slower, but often, depending on what sort of wood it is, it might need a more nitrogen, that sort of thing. So that's really where most of the research would be in how it reacts to different degrees of nitrogen, or how quickly it breaks down, that sort of thing.
Do you make your own?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We do all of our own soils.
Yeah.
And we're trying to keep things as consistent as we possibly can, but that has meant there's some price creep as well because the ingredients are becoming scarcer.
Yeah.
So obviously in that kind of environment, the prices of the imports go up. So it's a battle to try and ensure the consistent quality and try and keep things at that affordable level. It's a balance. It's tricky.
I think in the future, biochar would be a more consistent use thing in potting mixes.
As an additive?
Yeah, we actually use it in ours.
Because?
It aerates the soil, holds moisture.
Yeah.
It acts like compost, but doesn't break down any further.
Yeah, and that's what we want.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah,
and holds nutrients. So it's a natural sort of sponge, if you like, to hold nutrients, stop leaching. So, but it is an expensive product to produce. So that's something we've got to take into consideration. But maybe that's okay because it lasts longer.
Yeah, sort of I think there's a payback there, isn't there?
Yeah,
definitely.
Exactly.
Yeah, because I think I have a rose at the moment that if they're not being hit by chili thrip, I'm probably killing one of mine at the moment. I don't know how. It's turned completely yellow. I've dug down as far as I can, but of course it's a large pot. It's a big pot, but the roots are there. I suspect that at the bottom of this pot, it's mush. I suspect it's compacted. And I'm going to have to get this rose out and dig and empty this massive pot and dig down and see what's going on down the base there. I have a feeling that,
I think so.
I think so. But not in that first top part.
Yeah.
I can't see.
Yeah,
but
okay.
The yellowing points to that, doesn't it? The yellow, pure yellow leaves, it's defoliating at the moment. Having said that, I have a silver birch about to defoliate and he looks exactly the same. And I'm thinking, is it autumn? Are you underwatered? Are you overwatered? And given our bit of splash of water we had last night, well, it was lovely for our Northern Corridor friends. I mean, probably too lovely for some of them, given what I saw on the news. But as we were saying off air, trees dying everywhere. And trees tend to die slowly, and from my knowledge, but when you're driving around, I'm just seeing some very sad sights, and a lot of even our native stuff is absolutely curling its toes up. And it's been, well, it's a record drought, and it's been very, very rough on our plants, rough on us. If we weren't gardeners, we were saying off air, perhaps it wouldn't impact us as much, but it's our environment. And
Exactly.
Yeah, so now I know you've got a couple of emails to do. Are you okay to do a couple before we end up having our chat with Stephen? Because I know once we get Stephen on air, we can just sit back.
Okay.
He's like, press his button and go. Yeah.
All right. So I've got an email here from Ruth, and it's a picture here on some citrus leaves. These pests look like aphids to me. They're pretty much aphids. Aphids tend to attack, well, any sap-sucking creatures tend to attack plants that are either suffering from drought or nutrition or stressed in some way. They tend to attack in certain seasons. Hopefully, as soon as it starts raining, the tree will start coming back. There's a number of things you can do to get rid of them, just to relieve the plant. I would use soap sprays, chili sprays, those sort of things.
I mean, aphids, the adults are not terribly mobile, so you can actually hose them off with a strong jet of the hose if you can get it into, I don't know how big the tree is, if it's a sapling or mature, but if you can get the hose jets up, you will manage to knock a lot of them off onto the ground where they'll be eaten by other things, and they don't tend to find their way back to the tops of the plants. So that's usually a very low impact environmentally way to cope with it. As Paul suggested, soapy sprays work very, very well. Chili sprays, you can kind of just work up from there as far as the heavy duty impact goes.
You always start at the kindest end first.
And as Paul suggested, it's the fresh, beautiful young tip growth they usually go for. And they're farmed by ants as well. So if there's a lot of ant activity around the tree, if you can do something to potentially minimise that. And, you know, they tend to be around a lot at the moment because the soil is so dry.
Absolutely.
So
I think you can put barriers around the trunk of the tree at night, so that, because the ants usually aren't as active at night.
All those sorts of things. If you can see that the ants are active, I would point the finger at the ants as being how they got there in the first place.
So, and for ants, is it good to, if you have an ant issue, in a pot or around, is it wetting agent helpful?
All of those things are, If you, depending on how large the pot is, if you can soak the pot in a larger container of water for a while just to make sure that the pot is thoroughly re-wet, that will help discourage the ants for sure.
And what do you two know, dare I open my mouth about this, about chili thrip and the management of it? What do you get asked that at your business?
Well, we do, but I to be honest, we're sort of not really rose
people.
Obviously it's not just roses, they attack lots of other things. But generally it's a case of, you know, trying to trim off and treat appropriately as you can, and they do tend to be seasonal to a degree in Perth.
Yeah, correct.
I've got one customer who is a rose lover, and he's you were talking off air before about how some people are just giving up and ripping out roses, but he's determined to persevere. And he's tried a few different things, and one thing that he claims has helped, he says it certainly hasn't got rid of them, but he includes diatomaceous earth around the roses.
I did wonder about that.
With the theory behind that being that I believe they pupate
in the ground.
Yeah, exactly. So any kind of barrier that stops them laying eggs or emerging from the soil
is a good thing.
It's just something to consider. As I said, have no personal experience, but it's what somebody who has used it has told me. So
You stock diatomaceous earth?
Yeah, we do.
It's an interesting product, isn't it?
We can't actually sell it as a pest control product.
Oh.
No, because it's not registered with the AMPV or whatever. So We were allowed to say that insects don't like it.
Okay. Yeah.
But yeah, we've got stern letters from them in the past about how we market it and all the rest of it, because there is a process for anything that you sell as a pesticide where it has to have various, I suppose, testing, but also efficacy rates and things like that. And because diatomaceous earth is a natural product, most times when people go through the process of registering a product as a pesticide, it's a patented recipe that they've developed.
Yeah.
So obviously they claim the IP of it.
Mm.
But if it's a natural product that you can get anywhere, it's very difficult for people to pay the money to go through that process if they have no ownership over that IP.
Exactly.
And it's partly the same bureaucracy that involves neem oil in Australia as well. And why you'll find on the packages of neem products it says don't use on edibles, and it's partly to do with that process as well, without getting too...
Yeah, because I'm sure you could go deeper and further, 100%. Yeah. Okay, we'll take this quick call before we go to a break. We're in Gooseberry Hill. Eileen, good morning.
Morning.
Good morning. I was interested listening to the ants you were talking about.
Yes.
I had a dreadful problem with the ants that got into my finger lime, because I grow everything in pots up here because you can't dig holes.
Yeah.
And the ants got into my finger lime, and I didn't. And part of that finger lime pot system, I also use it to keep the bees watered, because they're in a double pot, and the one pot drains. Underneath that drained pot, I've got another container with a brick with three holes in it, a clay brick, and the water runs from the finger limes into the clay brick hole pot. So I couldn't poison the ants with anything else, but I was just so desperate, because every time you water the finger lime, I had to water quite regularly because they dry out so quickly. The ants would all come up to the surface. And what I ended up doing was I used those ant-rid containers. You know, I had a couple of little strips, and I put them in. I've been fighting with them now for a couple of weeks. But I've got rid of the ants out of that pot by just using those ant-rid containers, because that didn't contaminate. Because I take them out when I watered.
Sure, yep. Well, congratulations. And, that's something, if you've managed to overcome the problem in that pot. That's not a bad solution, I guess, because it wouldn't be harming the bees.
No, because I also have, and I'm a member of WASS, but I can't manage my hives anymore because they're just too heavy and I'm useless.
Oh, no.
But the other thing that I've had a dreadful problem up here with, is the mealybug.
Yeah.
And I went out and they actually destroyed bulbs that have been in the ground for years and years.
Yeah.
Wow.
And to find out, like with the neem oil and what have you, in the finish, what I had to do, I had to dig them up. I sprayed them with spray in a brown paper bag, and I haven't planted them back out yet. But this morning when I went out to get my paper, I noticed the neem oil and the mealybug are absolutely all over one of the hibiscus. So I'll be out there pruning all that off and bagging that and spraying it. But the mealybug have been dreadful.
Yes, they have. They really seem to have got a hold of late. And Faye's obviously listening to the program, Faye Acaro.
Hello.
And she's trying to message us. So what we'll do, Eileen, we do have to go to a break. We'll see what Faye's got phone call. And
with the ants, that's what I use. But because I also water the bees, because that was one of their main water sources, because they couldn't drown because of the clay brick.
Yeah.
Okay,
thank you for your call. Cheers. Okay, we'll be back in a moment. Curtain Radio. You are tuned to Let's Talk Gardening. My special guests in the studio this morning are Linda and Paul Michener, filling in for Faye today, who's out there nannering away. and Linda and Paul, of course, from the famous Green Life Soil Co. Now, I believe that we do have Stephen Ryan online. He has been driving and he's needed to pull his car over so that he can chat with us. So hopefully he's done that now and we can have a bit of a chat. Yes. Stephen, hi, are you there?
I'm here, and I apologise for any background noise of people zooming along the freeway.
Oh, no, not at all. Where are you tracking to?
Well, I've just been on ABC in Melbourne, and I'm tracking home to Mount Macedon, which is about a 45-minute walk or drive.
Yes.
And you've caught me about two-thirds of the way home.
I see. Oh, well, thank you for speaking to us this morning, Stephen. I worked out that the last time we had you on air was 10 years ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Long time ago that we last spoke with you. And I know you just recently met up with Faye in Melbourne after the garden show, which we all attended. And you have a really interesting story for us. But before we start, Stephen, can you just give our listeners a little bit of a synopsis about you, if possible?
I can do that.
Yes,
yeah, well, I could go on all afternoon, but anyhow.
We know.
Yes, I have a nursery at Mount Macedon in Victoria that specialises in rare and unusual cool to cold climate plants.
Yeah.
And that's sort of my base. That's what I do day to day. But I'm certainly a media operative as well. So I write for the Royal Horticultural Society of Victoria. I'm also their patron. I'm patron of the Friends of the Geelong Botanic Gardens. I've got to an age, apparently. I do radio here in Melbourne, both on community radio and also ABC radio. And I've written a couple of books and I lead tours overseas. I do all sorts of stuff.
You really do. I was actually reading on your website yesterday. You've got a fabulous tour by the look of it coming up next year.
Oh, yes. Normandy and Brittany.
My antenna went up when I saw that. I must say it looks absolutely magnificent.
I just love that part of France, and it's not the most travelled part of France, but from a gardening perspective, it is just superb.
Yeah.
So it's definitely worth going to. I think our trip's about 19 days, and we visit lots of highlight gardens as well as doing cultural things as well while we're there.
Yeah, no, ticking a lot of boxes, Stephen. As I say, my antenna certainly went up when I glanced there. It's a hard job, but someone has to do it, right?
Yeah. And it might as well be me.
It may as well. And what continues to drive you, Stephen, in the industry?
Anything horticultural keeps driving me. So finding the new plant, finding the new garden, visiting plants in the wild, which is what I'm going to be doing in a few weeks' time because we're off to Madeira and the Azores. And that's a part of the world I've long wanted to get to and have a look at the plant material there. So that sort of stuff drives me. But I get obsessed about a project, and that's actually something I'd love to talk about this morning, if you don't mind.
No, I'm looking forward to it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I must say I got goosebumps reading this story yesterday.
Yes. Well, anyhow, a local resident of Mount Macedon who passed away in 1922, so just a little over 100 years ago, was a lady called Alice Rowan, and she may not be as obviously remembered in Western Australia as she should be, because in the late 1800s, she travelled on her own to Western Australia, and some of her most amazing botanic artworks were painted of some of the wildflowers in Western Australia. So Western Australian listeners should have their radar go up about Alice Rowan. But then if you are broadcasting all over the world, so should the people in America, so should the people in New Zealand, so should the people in Papua New Guinea, of all places, because in 1916, so right in the middle of the First World War, she got permission to go to Papua New Guinea, and she went up into the highlands, and her reason for being there was she wanted to paint all of the birds of paradise because they thought they were going to go extinct, because ladies of fashion love their feathers for hats and things, so they were killing them in vast quantities. So on her own, she got herself up into the highlands, and of the 50-something species of birds of paradise, she managed to paint 45 of them.
Yeah, that's incredible.
And when you think about it, would you do that today on your own?
No.
Up into the highlands of Papua New Guinea. I mean, I wouldn't.
No, I'm a scaredy cat.
I wouldn't say I'm a scaredy cat, but I am somewhat risk averse.
Yeah.
So I don't know that I'd want to be up in the highlands on my own at this point in time. But she did it on her own, and believe it or not, with whalebone corsets, Victorian gowns, and great big picture hats, to boot.
That's the part that grabbed me when I saw some photos of her and understood that she was out doing all of this dressed in that way back then that ladies did. Oh, it just... It's just incredible. It just amazes me. She certainly has been a trailblazer and needs much more recognition, Stephen.
And that's what I'm about, because what I am doing at the moment is I'm trying to raise funds to get a statue of equality made of her, because in Victoria, I don't know what it's like in Western Australia, but in Victoria we've got far more statues of horses, dogs and non-existent fabled creatures than we have of women.
Yeah, 12 women, I read, out of 583 statues. Yeah.
It's just outrageous.
It really is.
So anyhow, I'm trying to raise funds to have a statue of Alice Rowan made and appropriately being put up at Mount Macedon, where she died. And she spent a lot of her adult life and even her childhood up there in between moving around the world and stuff. And my long-term aim is to get the statue in place, have it all landscaped, have interpretive signage, get a local street name changed into her honour, and also endow a botanic art prize for, we have a very important botanic art exhibition that happens up here at Mount Macedon every 2 years. And in fact, today is the first day of the exhibition for this year.
Oh, really?
And so I want to have enough money there where we can use the interest to every 2 years give a prize to a botanic artist in her name.
Oh, wow. Okay. All right. And so what? How much money do you need?
Well, just for the statue alone, I need to raise $250,000.
Yeah.
Wow. So we're talking fairly big bickies.
Yeah.
And, of course, then there's the endowment of the art prize and all those other things. So I might well be doing this for a long time, but we're doing all right. We've raised $27,000 so far, so we're doing pretty well. And I'm still, you know, out there looking for philanthropy in both small and large quantities.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Anybody that can help would be gratefully received.
Yes, indeed. And she was an accomplished artist. She won awards.
Oh, yeah, much to the annoyance of the male artists of the time.
Yeah.
Streeton's, Roberts, Bouvelet, McCubbin, they all thought she was a lady who painted flowers, so it wasn't fine art.
It wasn't real. And she carried on, even though they basically shunned her. She still continued on doing her thing. She was very strong.
Oh, she was an amazing woman. So if anybody wants to help, if they go into the website of the Mount Macedon District and Horticultural Society and look in the events column, they'll find all the information about Alice Rowan, and they can make a direct donation to the Mount Macedon account, or they can put money through the Australian Cultural Fund. And the link is there in the event column, and they can get tax deductibility as well.
Oh, yeah, of course. And where is all her artwork now, do you know?
Well, it's spread around, but the National Library in Canberra ended up with 970 of her works, and it's thought to be the largest collection of any given artist in one institute anywhere in the world. So that's pretty impressive in its own right.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, but they're everywhere. I mean, the NGV in Melbourne has got five or six of her works. A lot of the regional galleries have got one or two of her works. I know Castlemaine's got a few. So there's a lot around. I don't know what's in the West, but I would be really surprised if there weren't some of her works in some of your artistic institutes there as well.
Yeah, I'd like to track some down. I'm really keen to observe more because obviously I wasn't aware of this lady, and so when I started reading, as I said, I had goosebumps and became more and more interested in how ahead of her time that she was and how...
Look, if anybody can get a copy of... There were two biographies done of her, Australia's Famous Daughter and The Flower Hunter. They are rip-roaring tales, and if there's not a movie in there, I don't know...
Where there would be one.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, no, okay, that sounds... I'm just writing all of this down as well.
Yes, because people might well ask, and you can buy second-hand copies on the net of both of her works. And, I mean, just another little story about her. Around about the turn of the 20th century, she was in America, and she was working with an American lady botanist called Alice Lonsbury, and they, between them, she illustrated three of Alice's guidebooks to the flowers of North America, which in its own way was a cutting edge piece of technology, really, because there weren't really guidebooks around that you could carry out into the wild and actually ID the plants from them. So she was very important in America as well.
Yeah, incredible life's work that needs the recognition. And people like you are obviously going to do that, and I have no doubt there's many more like this lady out there. And it just seems in that time, women weren't identified for a great deal at all.
And, no, they were supposed to stay at home and look after the children and manage the household.
Yes, yes. Because I remember we were talking to Jane Edmondson not that long ago, and she was actually saying when she tried to study horticultural culture, going back some years ago, it was a very difficult thing for her to do.
And Jane's not as old as Alice Rowan.
That's it. That's it. Yeah.
Definitely not.
And it astonishes me. I mean, yeah. What's the difference? Why not? Yes.
Yeah, so. Well, exactly. I mean, women have equally as good a brain, possibly even better than most of us guys.
This is true.
There's no reason why they can't do virtually anything they want to. And horticulture is a perfectly logical place for both men and women to work in.
Agreed.
On an equal footing.
Agreed. Well, Squire, we wish you every success with this. We've got some details here now, and we really hope. Do you have a timeline for this project?
If I can get the statue finished and in place by the art exhibition in 2 years' time, so that we can have an unveiling at actually the next exhibition, so that'll be 2026, yeah. I'd be really pleased.
Really happy. And the sculptor that will be doing this, is that Jennifer Mann?
Yes, Jennifer Mann did a sculpture in Melbourne recently of a lady called Zelda Duprano, which was a woman who fought for equal pay rights of women back in the 1960s. And it's a stunningly beautiful sculpture. And it's one of those sculptures about, you know, equality in statuary that has been done. So Jennifer's got the points on the board. She lives locally. She only lives about 15, 20 minutes away from Mount Macedon. And believe it or not, her husband grew up in the house that Alice Rowan died in.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so, wow.
Lots of synergy going on there.
Yeah, no, incredible. All right, well, we will try and do what we can do from our side of the rabbit-proof fence for you, Stephen. We wish you much luck in this project. Very, very noble of you to be doing this, recognising.
I'm completely obsessed by it now.
Yeah,
so it's gonna...
yeah, I can understand quite right, why. Quite right. And when you read the story, I understand. Absolutely. Yeah, you've only just sort of scratched the surface of, about this lady.
Hours about Alice Rowan, because there's just so many fabulous stories about this woman. You know, it needs to be retold, it needs to be understood, and it certainly needs to be recognised.
Yes, yes, and thank you for doing it. I appreciate it very much. And so your day is obviously planned ahead now. You're heading back.
I'm going up home, changing back into my work clothes. I'll call in at the hall where the art show is on starting today, and then I'll go up to the nursery and work up at the nursery and go home and do some gardening afterwards.
My goodness. All right. Well, we'll let you get on with the rest of your day, Stephen.
Right.
Thank you very much for joining us. We won't let 10 years go by until
yes,
we speak to
don't.
You again. And appreciate very much you coming on air and sharing with us this morning. Thank you.
Absolute pleasure.
All right.
Hit the road.
Take
Bye.
Care. Thank
Bye.
You, Stephen. What a... amazing man. He is in his own right as well. He's an industry icon, and there isn't a great deal that Stephen doesn't know across the board. He is a special, very special person, many books that he's written. And, of course, I've never been to his plant nursery, the Dicksonia Rare Plant Nursery. Love to go. There's so much going on over in Melbourne. Need to spend more time there, but it sounds absolutely fascinating. He himself needs to be recognised too, and I love the fact that he's making this his project. All right, we're going to have a short break, and when we return, we're in Southlake. We're going to be chatting with you next, Frank. Thank you.
100.1 FM.
And we are back. You are tuned to Let's Talk Gardening. We're going to have a chat with Frank now. Frank's situated in Southlake. Good morning. How are you going?
Yeah, good, thank you. Look, you were mentioning about soil plant testers. I've been told, natives don't need a lot of water. The mornings are getting cooler. Now, I go out there and I've been giving my natives plants a solid, good water, absolutely drenching the ground. I'll get out there next morning with a meter, and around some plants it is wet, but other areas it's totally dry. And the water's got to be going somewhere. So, I mean, what you know, is there an answer? What's going on? You know, but
I would say, Frank, in the sand, it can't actually, most of our sands in Perth, especially down in South Lake there, the water's just going to drain away. Most native plants aren't all the same, so it depends on the plant. Some will take a lot more water than others.
Yeah. the advice I've been given from a nursery in Maida Vale, they've put me onto a good water granule solution. I've put all that into the garden and dug it in real well. I've given the plants a good solid water. But as I've been told, you mentioned, we've got a dirty, sort of sandy soil. What can I say, short of saying flooding the ground? The water's definitely going down, so it's got to be going somewhere. But when I go to soil test it next morning, some areas are still bone dry.
Yeah, because it's not holding on to the water, Frank. So it's good that you've used the wetting granules. That's one solution. Clay, adding clay to our sandy soil is something that we go on about sort of ad nauseum, because it certainly does help. So it's quite natural that there's pockets of your garden that are going to be more hydrophobic than others. So some areas will wet naturally better than others.
Okay.
And so you might find that adding an equal amount of those wetting granules everywhere isn't necessarily going to solve the problem. You'll find that there'll be some pockets that you'll probably have to treat again.
Yeah, and also, Frank, do you use mulch? Is the area mulched at all?
Oh, yes, it's got very good, excellent. It's got ample native mulch, yes. Yeah.
Okay, so that's always a good thing.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Some plants, sorry to interrupt.
No, go for it.
Some plants, depending on what they are, will transpire more than others also. So they will be taking up that water and then losing the moisture through their little stomata, through the pores, if you like, of the plant. And naturally, some plants have the ability to hold on to more water than others.
Yeah.
So there's all those variables as well
in
the fact that they might be using more water.
And
Well, the plants look healthy enough, you know. You mentioned gravel. Can you buy that in small quantities, or you need to go to a soil yard?
Clays are often, there are a few on the market. We do actually sell one as well. But I don't overdo it, and it's just really about getting it in the top surface. So, you know, 100 mils to 300 deep, to slow the water draining. Is a good way. Sometimes you can add it as a slurry, so you can put it in a container and work up a bit of a slurry with the water, like in a bucket or a watering can, and pour that over the soil. That may help. Often, though, native plants can go dormant in summer, so they won't take up water. They won't be active in some cases.
Well, I can't sort of describe the native plants to you, because I have quite a few. You know, a couple of them are mini bottle brushes, like little bottle brush trees or sort of gravilia plants. You know, Well, I'll give it a go at what you mentioned, and I'll just play around and persevere and test with what you've mentioned anyway.
But if the plants are looking well and healthy, maybe there's not too much. You just hopefully the weather's going to change and we get some more rain.
They certainly look healthy enough. Okay, then.
Thanks, Frank.
All right. Okay, thanks very much for your help, okay?
All right, you take care. Thank you.
Okay, cheers. Bye.
Now, I know a few emails have come in, so we've got some more calls coming through. Can we crack a couple? Is it possible, or do you need a little more time to have
a look? The lady that sent in the email with the aphids had sent in an email last week, and John's very kindly kind of given us the backstory to that now.
Yeah.
And there's a before and an after of
this tree.
A period of time taken in 2021, and the other is more recent, and it's obviously struggling. So what are your thoughts, Paul, on that?
Well, I can see a raised garden bed. Citrus are very hungry plants. They need a lot of nutrients, so like all the nutrients they can get. So, and I noticed there's no mulch around this tree as well. So it's in a raised garden bed where the water's going to drain out fairly quickly. And there's no mulch, so it's going to dry out from the top and drain away quite quickly. So, and I say the tree's quite a few years old, so it's probably used all the nutrients in the soil. So I would definitely give it a good feed and probably feed it maybe twice a year, like after summer and after winter. And you know, it's when the growing season starts, and give it a heavy feed of mulch.
It should come back. I mean, it's come through a very, very tough summer, as have we all. And it's looking stressed. And I suggest that Paul's probably spot on. It's just been suffering a little.
Yeah, and there's a few fences and there's concrete around there, so it's going to... You can just imagine on a hot day when it hits 40 degrees, it's probably going to be about 55 degrees a metre off the concrete there.
And the tree's got fruit on it as well. So what happens is they'll often put their energy into the fruit as a reproduction survival methodology. Yeah. So sometimes limit the nutrients going to the foliage and things like that because they're just trying to pump out the fruit. So that's why when you buy a young fruit tree, they usually suggest that you remove the fruit for the first couple of years because you want to encourage the plant to put it root development and top growth rather than fruit. Mm. But I think it'll come back with a bit of TLC.
Yeah, that'll come back really well, I think.
All right, we do have to go to a break. 94841927, guys, we shall return shortly.
A lifetime of music, Cartoon Radio.
And you are with Ray this morning and my special guests, Paul and Linda Michener from Green Life Soil Co. And we've been working them quite hard this morning already. And at 9 o'clock, we will be crossing to the news for you. We are in Vic Park. Good morning to you, Angela.
Good morning. How are you?
We're well. Thank you.
Thank you. I love listening to your program. And I've got a question about my fig tree. It fruited very, very early last year. We had a fantastic crop and, you know, stripped it, made jam, etc. And in the past month or so, it started fruiting again. I've got little figs everywhere. So I'm just wondering what's happened and... Given that it's already April, I doubt that they will ripen and whatever. So some advice would be really welcome.
I'd suggest the fig tree is thoroughly confused. I mean, a lot of fruit trees this year seem to have been. I think there's just the seasonality and the late summer and things. I would agree. I doubt they're going to ripen as well.
I've seen this happen with mulberry trees as well. If the season goes on, they start fruiting again.
So I don't think there's really, you know, much you can do about it. I don't know if it's worth keeping some figs on the tree and see what happens or you may be better off sort of trying to just...
Yeah,
because it should be going dormant pretty soon, you would think. So, it's very odd.
It's almost like it had this last burst of energy and thought, might just see what I can do. And there are so many tiny little figs everywhere. So I'd like to do the right thing by the tree. And if it's sort of stripping the fruit, that's what I'll do
in preparation for it to have it.
Needs to go to sleep, I think.
Yeah. I'd probably strip some of them off and see how it goes.
Curiosity, yeah. I would have to keep a few. I just don't expect it to come to much. So, yeah, I do think that stripping the tree would be the tree would then put more of its energy back into storing the things it needs to store during its dormancy over winter. Yeah.
Yep, exactly. Okay, wonderful. That's what I'll do.
Good luck.
All right.
Thanks, Angela. Let us know.
Night.
Yeah, you take care. Cheers.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
And next week, here's one for your diaries. Next weekend, there is an open garden happening in Pickering Brook, okay, the 27th and the 28th of April, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Now, it's actually located at the Core Cider. Many people would know where that is, up in Pickering Brook. But hidden away is an 80-year-old orchard that has never been open to the public for many, many years. And they're opening it that weekend only to raise funds for Breast Cancer WA. I think no doubt we'll be speaking to someone next week about the gardens. And from what I'm looking at here in the pictures, it is an absolutely beautiful garden. There's glorious bridges and ponds. And I'll just read you a little bit without going overboard. They've got many fruit trees and dragonfly ponds, and they have apples and pear trees and lush emerald green lawns, natural ponds, picturesque little bridges. The autumn glory of deciduous trees is what this visit is about. And the garden is lushly planted with exotic trees, both in the ground and in very large pots, some which are pruned into fascinating shapes and some simply left to provide welcome shade on a hot day. It's an exquisite garden that I'm looking at here, guys, and it is happening next weekend, 27th and the 28th of April, 35 Merivale Road in Pickering Brook. And I think it's one we'll all be wanting to get along. There is disabled parking, etc. And we will go into more detail next week, but I flag now for you. The Dragonfly Ponds is what it's called, and it's located at the Core Cider Bistro in Pickering Brook. So, as I say, a rare opportunity to have a sneak peek of a garden that people don't normally get to have a look at. So pop it in your diaries and we'll chat more about it next week. Now, we do have free lines, 94841927. Can I ask, we're leading into the news at 9. Can we get another email? Can I crack the whip?
Well, I was just going to comment, who doesn't like sneaking out, looking in other people's gardens, frankly?
I am the biggest sticky beak of all. And I do that even when I'm walking around my burb. I've always got my head stuck. People probably think I'm stalking them, but I'm actually just looking at their garden.
Exactly. We've been busted a few times with not seeing people actually in their gardens. We're walking past and making a comment and the little head pops up.
Like,
oh, morning.
Yeah.
And if I could give a quick plug for the Open Garden group, I know that they are looking for more gardens for next year.
Uh-huh.
And it doesn't have to be a big garden. They're just sort of looking for a little bit of variety. With people's blocks getting smaller these days, smaller gardens can be just as inspirational for people. So definitely check out the Open Gardens website and see what's involved. Because if people like looking into your garden, there's a chance that everybody would like it as well. So,
Cool. Well said.
All right. Do I still have time?
Yeah, you have. We've got a couple of minutes.
Bougainvillea. A lady has sent in, Veronica indeed, has sent in a photo of a bougainvillea, and she's asking how she can encourage it to flower more. The secret to bogues seems to be treat them mean, keep them keen.
Yeah.
Overwatering and over-fertilising, particularly high nitrogen fertilisers, will mean less flowers. Pruning heavily. This one seems to be perhaps near a walkway or driveway, so you might find you're having to prune it, but heavy pruning will discourage those flowers from forming on the bracts. So, yeah, if any fertiliser, go for potassium rich rather than nitrogen rich. And, they don't need much water at all. So you may be overwatering, and that could cause a little less flowering as well.
Yeah, I think so. Just tip pruning as well if you were going to...
Yeah, they say late winter, early spring, and then leave it alone, but don't prune it too heavily.
Mm.
And they're so much fun to prune.
Oh, yeah.
I used to work in an office that looked out on one on the side fence, and when the gardener did his prune, he would always come into my office and he'd go, I just want to apologise in advance
for the language.
Swearing.
Yeah, no, I totally get it. What I think I'll do is, since I've got Paul and Linda with me, we're going to give away a $75 gift voucher from Green Life Soil Co. Compliments of Paul and Linda. I'll have a nice tricky question for you. Of course, you must be a Curtin FM member and not to have won a prize in the last 28 days. You know the drill. This is a little bit of a different question, and John is playing hardball with you, but get your thinking caps on for this one. Which is not in the same plant family? Which is not in the same plant family? Cabbage, kale, lettuce, Brussels sprouts. Which is not in the same plant family? Cabbage, kale, lettuce, or Brussels sprouts? Which is the odd one out? Give Bev a call now on 94841927. Here's the news. Mostly sunny today with a maximum of 27. Right now it's sitting at 19.1 and the humidity is at 58%. Tomorrow will be sunny with a maximum of 27, and also Monday sunny with a maximum of 29. And looking ahead, we've got 32s and 33s and 34s coming up later in the week. So autumn continues, a very, very warm autumn. We did get a splash of rain. I think it's something like, John gave me the stats, 1.2 mils sitting in April. So let's hope what happened yesterday. I mean, I don't want to see people getting flooded out and things like that, but it was nice to see the northern suburbs get a really good amount of water. I think maybe the southern suburbs didn't get anything
anywhere near like that.
I know we just had a splash.
Not even sure it made it really into the hills.
Well, it did head south, but I don't know.
Yeah. Okay, now we do have a winner for the Green Life Soil Co. $75 gift voucher, Sonia of Mundajong. Good on you, Sonia. That voucher will be sent to you this week. Let us know what you do with it. The question was, which is not in the same plant family? Cabbage, kale, lettuce, Brussels sprouts. The answer is lettuce, of course. It's in the Asteraceae family. All the others are the Brassicaceae family. So another one of John's curly questions for you. So he tries to outsmart the listeners, but he doesn't succeed. They're always one step ahead. So good on you. Now, in the next hour, we'll be giving away a $75 gift voucher from Bigger Trees as well. Now, I see free lines, 94841927. Special guests in the studio with me this morning, Linda and Paul Michener from Green Life Soil Co. Here's your chance to learn as much as you can about, well, I think personally for me, I think soil's a massive subject. And also planting now. How are you guys getting on with planting out your veggies? Is that kicking off? What's happening?
Yeah, we've just put in a couple of new beds because we moved just before Christmas.
Yeah.
So we set up.
And this is at home?
Yes. Yeah, this is at home. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So we've been working hard and, we're waiting for things to grow.
Yeah, we've only just, like, in the last week, the big Easter project was to get these garden beds in and filled.
Yeah.
And luckily we know where we can get some really good soil. So, so that was great. So we've got, we've planted some
So we got brassicas in,
So put in some kale. I've planted some pea seeds. Paul's put in some turnip and beetroot seeds. So we're just waiting on those little things to show their little heads.
Yeah.
We've got some English spinach growing. Put in coriander and things, some of those, you know, winter herbs, get them cranking.
Get the garlic in.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
We've got garlic in yet.
Mm.
That's an interesting one. And people keep asking me, is it time to put it in? Because traditionally the thought is, you know, Anzac Day kind of planting.
Yeah.
But it's just been so warm. We've had it available in store now for a few weeks, and I know people have planted it. Some people are saying it hasn't shown its head yet, and other people are saying it has, and the difference seems to be those with retic it is growing, but it's I'm kind of inclined to hold off a little
bit more,
because it's just crazy warm still.
We're just waiting for that to drop, really, the temperature.
Yeah, 33s and 34s are still summer temperatures, aren't they?
And the soil temperature's still very warm too.
Too warm.
Well, I suppose that's good for a lot of germination in some things, but then you've got to make sure you've got that sweet spot of keeping the soil moisture there too, because what often happens with small seeds is things will start to germinate, the seed casing will open, but if the top layer of soil dries out, the seed will die, and you haven't seen any green shoots. It hasn't had a chance to do that yet, so people think that the seeds fail, but really it's just the environment.
The conditions. Got you. And are heirloom seeds really popular?
Always.
I think so too.
Especially if you save your own seeds as well, once you have used some heirloom seeds. It's a really useful way to go. Often can help keeping pests at bay when you have self-sown or, you know, you save your seeds. Okay. They sort of adapt to your particular area.
Well, it's like the tomato that grows in the crack in the paving, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's always the toughest ones.
It gives
you the tastiest fruit.
As well. Because people struggle sometimes with tomatoes. All right, let's head to Waterford. Good morning, Eddie. How's it going?
Well, I'm fine. How are you? I enjoy your program.
Thank you.
I just wanted to let you know that some 2 years ago, you had interviewed a person by the name of Jude Scott from La Sparta Garden. And I got her contact address through your program, and I got in touch with her. I'm also the vice president of the National Seniors Perth branch, and I took a bunch of seniors, two busloads of them, recently to Jude Scott's garden.
Right.
And they enjoyed themselves. She charges $5 per head and provides an excellent morning tea with scones and strawberry jam and that sort of thing. She has a garden, originally started with 4 acres, absolutely poor soil in that area, as you know, and she's built up the soil, and it's really a tropical garden. She's got mangoes, she's got avocados, she's got lots of citruses, and of course, her husband, whom she calls the gnome, has built the footpaths around the place that makes it wheelchair accessible.
So, Eddie, is she involved in the open garden scheme? So,
If you ring her up, she will open it up. Certainly, she opened it up for us, especially as a group.
Yeah. It sounds like that's one.
Used to open up, yes.
Yeah, one for open gardens to consider as well.
Very important, however, she has a studio at the back of her house, and she is a very good artist.
Yes,
that's right. And of course, she has bric-a-brac there from the old stamping, like homes and, you know, all sorts of pentagrams and those sorts of things all around scattered in the garden. So it's a marvelous place if you're looking for a garden, and particularly groups going. I would highly recommend her.
All right. I'm writing all this information down because, you know, garden clubs also are always looking for a location to have their meetings and things as well and visit a nice garden at the same time. So got the details. Thank you, Eddie.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, you look after yourself. Take care.
I have a question. Yep. I have a fajua tree, and it was laden with fruit, but about 50% of them were susceptible to fruit fly. Is there a way of controlling that?
Oh, fruit fly.
Yes and no.
I would always look at about three methods of controlling fruit fly. I'd definitely have baits. You can use exclusion netting as well.
Yeah.
Often can work. What do you think?
Well, I think if you're trying to control it organically, definitely it's more than a single approach. Exclusion netting is by far and away the best. If you can keep the tree trimmed to a certain size and shape and erect some kind of frame, the nets don't have to be on it year-round because obviously you want the pollination and all the rest of it. But as soon as the fruit are forming and before they get big enough to be struck, then you want to make sure that you can cover up the tree. Baits and things are helpful. There's certain types of lures and there's certain types of other treatments that you can put around. But generally, without putting anything systemic into the plant, which will then come through into the fruit, yeah, it's tricky. And fruit fly, they're so annoying and disheartening. And
always remember too, Eddie, that fruit fly don't travel that far. I think a kilometre and a half. So as you walk around the neighbourhood, if you see people leaving fruit lying on the ground...
Yeah, big problem.
Yeah, leave a bit of a friendly note in there.
You know, letterbox.
Yeah. Just if you could help them pick it up.
Neighbourhood communication. And obviously don't leave any fallen fruit yourself around, because you just... Yeah, I know the pain. I know the pain. It's sad.
It's a beautiful plant. It's from South American origin. I think it's coming through New Zealand. It's got beautiful flowers.
Flowers are amazing. Yeah,
one of my favourite plants.
Yes, and I can control the tree. You can prune it. And I have pruned it back just now. I've taken off about a third of it. But next year, I'll try and put an exclusion net and see what happens.
Yeah,
I also have a recipe jam. Yep. That I have got on a website, so that people can look at it at times.
They are beautiful fruit. Yeah, really agree. We used to grow them when we had our property up in the hills, and luckily we were pretty fruit fly free up there. That wasn't easy to say.
Fruit fly free.
But we unfortunately had to contend with 28s, and for many years and they left them alone. But then once the one generation of parrots had learnt that they were tasty fruit, that was it. They teach their young, unfortunately.
To go there for a feed. We all have our cross to bear. Eddie, we need to move on. Thank you.
Thank you.
Cheers for that. And let's go to Shenton Park. We're talking about one of my favourites, Stephanotis. Sylvia, good morning.
Good morning. Yes, I have two creepers, and they look beautiful. The leaves are... Well, not so much now, but the leaves are beautifully in green, masses of flower, but no perfume.
That's unusual, because they are strongly fragrant. Yeah, and
they're beautiful, but I don't have any. And I also don't have any bees. Would that be the problem? I mean, I never see any bees.
If they're flowering, you would think the fragrance would be there. Are you saying that the fragrance is lacking recently, or has this particular plant never produced fragrant blooms?
There's two. I've got two of them, and they've never produced fragrance.
It would be the variety, wouldn't it?
Possibly, yeah. I'd say you've got some dud Stephanotis, which is very sad.
Yeah.
What do you think, Ray?
The only Stephanotis I know are always strongly fragrant.
They have
fragrant,
a beautiful perfume.
Yeah, absolutely.
You can smell them for miles, and I was so disappointed.
Yeah, and you obviously fertilise and do all the things that need to be done for them.
Do all that.
Very difficult one to answer.
Yeah, I'll try and look into that.
Yeah, we'll get John to do a little bit of his research out there.
I'm about to plant one, and I'm telling you, if that thing doesn't have a perfume, it's not staying.
Yeah.
It is disappointing, but yeah.
And there's also the variegated Stephanotis, which I love as well. Yeah. Very, very pretty to look at. Yeah. See what we can dig up for you, Sylvia.
Okay, thank you for that.
All right, thank you. And I think we have an email here somewhere. It's associated to Keith of Mandurah. Yeah, we've got it right here. Okay.
Hot off the press.
All right. Keith, good morning.
Good morning.
We're just looking at your email right now, Keith.
Horrible, isn't it?
What is it? Is that like is it scale? Or is it
mealybug? It's
a gooey, white gooey. I've just cut my Meyer lemon tree that was in a pot up the back that was riddled with the stuff.
Mealybug or I can't. Well,
it's a little tricky to see from the photo. Are you saying it's like a sap that's coming out of the stems of the plant?
Well, it's not, but it looks like it. It could be, but no. When I've scraped it off, it sticks to your fingers like a goo, and there's
no
lesions in the stem or anything. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, probably is like mealybug or cotton cushiony scale.
Yeah, I think so.
Yep.
Keith, does it get enough sun?
Not a lot.
Yeah, it needs... more air.
Yeah, I'd say like sap-sucking creatures to me are always a symptom of either lack of light or they're water-stressed or something like that. So
yeah, the little Maya lemon tree that I just cut out is in full sun all the time, for three quarters of the day anyway, and that was riddled with it. So I had to clean it up last year. I couldn't control it. I put all sorts of spray. I even sprayed it with Thermidor, but didn't seem to work. White oil didn't seem to knock them about. But I do have a mealybug.
If you can scrape them off physically, and you're saying there's no lesions on the stem underneath it, it's definitely some kind of sap-sucking creature on the outside, I'd say. And white oil should help, but with a lot of these treatments, you have to be vigilant and repeat it probably every few weeks. Because if it is some type of scale, what happens, I believe, is the females can lay eggs underneath their body. So you might kill off the parent, but once they're dead and fall off, the eggs will still hatch. So repeat treatments, you'll find you should be able to knock successive generations, and you should see it getting decreasing in activity as you go until you can get it down to a manageable level.
You're probably right with the eggs, because a couple of the leaves have got tiny little brown, like hundreds and thousands, but even smaller in rows on there. Something's laid on there.
So you better watch out. This is where Faye could come in handy, because there could even be like beneficials sort of moving in, as sometimes that can happen. But because, the actual creatures would lay eggs under themselves rather than elsewhere on the leaves, is my understanding. So if you can squish as many as you can, I don't know how big your coffee plant is, but if you can run your fingers up and down the main stems and squish as many as you can. Sometimes a toothbrush, in a little bit of metho. Obviously, you don't want it all over the leaves, but on the stems, like the metho will kill them and tends to get underneath them as well. So that's a pretty good treatment for mealybug and things too. So
Are they in pots too, Keith?
The tree's in a pot.
I'd try and change the conditions that it's in if you can, like a bit more light, bit more open, because these are generally tropical plants or semi-tropical, so you sort of want to recreate those conditions for them, which is a bit damper and humid and that sort of condition.
It's on retic in the pot, so it gets watered twice a week. I did have it in my covered in patio. Well, it's got blinds on them. It gets bloody hot in there this time of the year. A lot of the leaves, half the leaf from the tip of it, was all going brown. And I thought, it's getting too much heat. But I notice even now, looking at it, there's quite a few leaves that are half of the leaf is brown.
Are the leaves like crispy brown, or are they moist sort of brown?
No, they're moist still.
Okay.
No.
So that may even be overwatering.
Overwater.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm.
Might just need to drain, like if you can put it up on bricks or something help it drain.
The pot is actually on wheels, and after its water cycle, there is water dripping out the bottom of the pot.
Okay.
It could be overwatering, possibly. Yeah.
Yep.
I can certainly cut that back.
Yeah, give it a go. I mean, obviously nothing too radical, because you're trying to nurture it rather than shock it. But if you can sort of peel the watering back a little and just see if it improves with the conditions,
Yeah, change your conditions so the
I'll try all of those things. The diet costs me too much.
Exactly. Yeah. They are a little borderline, being tropical. They are a little borderline for Perth and Mandurah. So you do sort of pay attention to the environment and the microclimate to try and recreate its natural habitat, and you'll have better luck, you would hope.
Funny how I had a handful, got a handful of beans off it last year, but it's probably only a couple of years old.
Keith, we have to wriggle on, Squire.
Yeah, go for it.
All right, good luck. Thank you. Okay, we shall return. Curtain Radio. And our special guests in the studio this morning, we have Paul and Linda Michener from Green Life Soil Co. doing a Magnificent job. Now, Kate of Padbury has phoned in about the Stefan Notice and my previous call saying that she didn't seem to have any fragrance. And she said they don't really smell during the day. Their strongest fragrance is in the evening. She's been growing them for 50 years. So that is her comment. So thank you for that, Kate. And yes, it, you know, perhaps the fragrance is stronger in the evening. Maybe this lady's not out in her garden later in the day. We don't know. There's many, many variables. We appreciate you ringing in with that information. Now, we do have free lines, 94841927. Can I talk to you? Oh, have you got another email there, or you're looking down? Or
no, that's fine. I do have one more from Melanie, and it's a tricksy one. She sent in pictures of a lime tree with curled leaves, and she says the soil moisture seems fine when checked. It is damp, and she's got citrus on either side that don't seem to have the problem. She says it's in soil with compost in it on top of clay. And so, yeah, looking at these, it's not a particularly old tree. Paul's comments are that...
It looks like heat stress to me, like just the leaves are curling. Possibly there are different citrus on the either side. And there is a limestone wall in the background, which could be reflecting a bit more heat to that plant, potentially. Mm.
Yeah, it does seem to be reasonably close to the limestone wall. And to me, I can't see any visible signs in the photo of citrus leaf miner, which is obviously one of the reasons why leaves can twist and distort. It does, to me, look like heat stress. So keep an eye on it. It's a young tree. Now is probably a good time to feed it up. And I would hope, as the conditions change, that the tree should start putting on, you know, unaffected and healthy new growth.
Yeah, it looks healthy.
It's dark green, but it's got a little bit of twisting, which the leaves will tend to curl up because it's a plant's natural response to try and limit the amount of moisture that it loses through transpiration.
Yeah.
That's what it looks like to me. Mm. Yeah. It does seem to have some mulch around it. You know, definitely keeping it well mulched is
helpful.
Definitely, yep. So I think you're doing all the right things, so hopefully.
Steady as she goes.
Yes.
All right, well, thank you for that. Can I ask listeners, when you call in, to make sure your radio is turned off in the background? It's very hard for everyone else to listen to your question and our response because we obviously are echoing away there in the background. So do make sure when you do ring in that your radio is turned off. There's a call coming through at the moment, but whilst it is, can I talk to you guys about your newsletter that you put out every month, and it's free? And I encourage listeners to get online to your website and become a member and enjoy your newsletter, which I find incredible. And I'm just looking at this one, and if I can just touch on some of the key points, and maybe you can comment for people so that it gives them some a bit of a head start into handling autumn. Now, you're saying we need to keep up the watering until the rain does start, and there are cooler nights and a little bit of dew on the ground. But just your comments on that, keeping up the watering is an obvious thing at the moment because we just don't have enough rainfall to pull back on that. And certainly if you're growing vegetables and things, they need to be looked after.
Yeah, it's a bit of a balancing act because with the cooler nights and a bit of dew, you may not need as much water.
As much,
but you can't assume. You've got to, stick your fingers in the dirt and see how things are going.
Yeah, don't assume anything. Yeah. And feed your fruit trees.
Yes.
Big one right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Definitely. Yep. That's your evergreens, like your citrus, but also your deciduous before they do lose all their leaves so they can suck in some of that nutrient.
And if you're putting down organic fertilizers, you probably need to put them down sooner so they get a chance to break down and get taken, like, complexed into the soil by all the microbes. Mm-hmm. So if you're putting blood and bone down, obviously they need moisture, but it needs time to break down so the plants can actually access the nutrients. So.
Do you make your own blood and bone?
We do.
You do. Mm. Oh, that's very good. Very good to know. And you're talking here about citrus gall wasp.
Mm,
it's very prevalent this time of the year.
Yeah.
What can you tell us?
Oh, I'm sad because in our property in the hills, we were, touch wood, still free, but now in suburbia, I'm looking at my lemon tree that I've inherited from the previous owners, and I hadn't seen any, and I was thinking I might be lucky, but no, they're just starting to swell now.
Yeah.
So yes, we do have to cut that out, and it's a bugger of a thing, if I'm allowed really to say
is.
That word.
Yeah, of course.
Because mature trees everywhere that people have had, you know, for years are really suffering, and it's they're having fair. To trim it all the way back. I know. It's
and so if they're getting trimmed back like that, how do they get on in the next season for fruiting and things? I have to say I pulled my lemon tree out because I was in one of those epicenter for this particular wasp, and I've read that it only sort of stays within range. It doesn't fly very far. Again, it's a little bit like what you're describing with a fruit fly. They stay where they stay. Mm. And I wasn't winning. Oh. And I wasn't getting any fruit because of the cutting back.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, okay.
It's a drama. But I do recommend everybody to be aware of it, like keep an eye on it.
Check.
Chop it out of the trees. The treatment of using the potato peelers has been a bit disregarded now. People say that in WA we shouldn't be doing that. It's a bit too hit and miss as far as the results of it go.
Right.
Now's the time of year, if you do see the small galls, you can throw the cuttings directly into your rubbish bin. But past about June, July, I think they say that then you need to solarise them because the larvae now won't survive out of the tree. But as they get more mature, they can pupate and do their thing. And we obviously don't want to continue to spread it. And something that you can try in the spring, which is the season that they've emerged and they're mating as adults and laying more eggs, is a clay spray, which is something that the Ag Department are trialling. And it's been used successfully in other countries for a number of different pests. But how it works is it's a very, very fine kaolin clay that you mix with water into a slurry, I guess, and through a sprayer you coat the tree, particularly the branches and the stems, and as it dries it forms a visible
barrier.
White coating.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And the barrier discourages anything that has an ovipositor that will pierce through that to lay eggs because it will clog it up.
Mm.
And it's also helpful with things with chewing mouth parts, so insects like grasshoppers and things like that, because it will gum them up.
That's right.
So, again, no guarantees, but it's another thing in our armoury that we can certainly try. But it's a springtime thing because once it's in your trees, it won't stop it. But what you're trying to do is discourage the tree being struck again in the
next
spring.
Getting hit again.
Yeah.
All right, thank you. We're in Ballajura. Wendy, thanks for waiting.
Oh, that's okay. As usual, I love your program. I have a beautiful pink hydrangea that was given to me by some very dear friends. And it's been in a pot, but it was very sad this year. I don't know whether it was the excessive heat, but the flowers were almost bleached to a white colour. And I'm thinking of moving it into the ground. Now, what's the best way? Do I cut it right back, or what do I do?
Oh, wow.
Hello.
Yeah, we're thinking. That's a pregnant pause.
Oh, sorry. Hydrangeas.
I've been making sure that it's had plenty of water because being a hydrangea, that's what it needs. But yeah, it was the first couple of years I had it. It was absolutely magnificent. But this year, it's been very sad.
So, is it? You're saying it's still in a pot?
It's in a big pot, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And possibly changing and upgrading the potting mix would be something to try if it's been in the pot for a few years.
Yeah.
Just a couple of years, yeah. Mm.
I would be reticent about putting it in the ground there, Wendy. Just hydrangeas in our climate are be quite sensitive.
It would be in an area that would only get very early morning sun, and the rest of the day it would be in shade.
Well, could well work then, because they definitely need the shelter.
Yeah, I know that. Yeah.
If you're going to put it in the ground, I'd definitely amend the soil so that it holds plenty of water, slows the drainage down, so it can access that water.
Mm-hmm. I do have a bore as well.
Yeah. Okay.
Have you had the bore water tested at all for the pH or anything like that too?
No, I haven't. Okay. No, I haven't.
Be worth doing if you are using bore water and things are going a bit strange in your garden, particularly the end of this summer. You know where the groundwater levels are, the water tables have dropped, and certain bores are definitely getting a bit more salt in them and things like that.
Yeah,
so,
definitely salt is a bit.
I mean, the rest of the garden looks. very really good.
Yeah. Okay.
So that, I mean, that's really the only plant that it's not. I mean, the leaves are pretty, not too bad, but a lot of them have got sort of dried edges. But I think that's probably just the end of the season. But you know, apart from that, the leaves have been beautiful. It's just been the flowers.
Mm. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Sure. It is potentially worth just getting your bore water tested. I always say to people, it's not a bad thing to do anyway, to have a bit of knowledge, because you can collect some water and take it to a pool shop and they'll do a pH and a salt test, and they don't charge you for it.
Okay, I was about to say, where's the easiest place to
do that?
Yeah.
You
usually go to a pool shop. You can just be honest with them, and it doesn't take much to do.
Yeah, they'll have a little meter that they'll use, and it's a pretty quick thing.
You'll just get parts per million, and you want to be under 1,000 parts per million for any horticultural pursuit. As soon as it gets above 1,000, it tends to be a bit of an issue.
And some plants will tolerate more than others of different levels of things too. So sometimes when you know, things in the garden will... We had the same problem. Well, not... I'm sorry. I'm assuming, and it may not be your situation. But we had a situation in our garden with our boar that certain plants started looking really unhealthy and others were thriving. Yeah. And we couldn't figure it out. And ultimately, when we did get the water tested, the penny dropped for us because it was the plants that couldn't tolerate the salt that were...
talking about watering, I'm pretty outraged that we went to the trouble of putting a bore down 20 odd years ago and actually got a subsidy from the government for doing so, and now I'm only allowed to use it 2 days a week, but the lady next door stands for over an hour every day hand watering her lawn with scheme water.
That's what happens. Yeah.
Where's the logic in that?
There isn't any, Wendy.
I know. Yeah. But, I'll definitely do get that water tested, and thank you for your help.
And if you were to put it in the ground, which way would it be facing? The best success I've seen with hydrangeas is southeast.
Yeah,
it would face east.
Okay, good. Yep, all right.
Because I had one in Morley that was literally just outside on the fence in sun all day. And it was magnificent.
Yeah.
It was huge, and it never stopped flowering. Mm. As I say, this one, maybe I've been too kind to it.
I think that possibly the potting mix is getting on a bit.
Yeah,
too.
I'd say that. Yeah, I'd try that
2 years is sort of the limit.
I use the proper azalea potting mix, and, I use the azalea fertiliser on it, and also the go-go juice, which it seems to like.
Mm.
But, as I say, I'm flummoxed. I've never had this problem before.
Well, things are showing a lot of different stresses in the garden just because
they
of
are.
The summer that we've gone through. So best
of luck.
It's
been horrendous.
Thanks for your call, Wendy.
Thank you.
Okay, cheers for now. Let's go to Floreat Park. They're talking about a lime tree. Queenie, good morning.
Good morning, ladies. We've got a problem with our lime tree. It's just the leaves are sort of curling, turning back, and the limes are much smaller than they normally are. But the problem, I just wanted to ask, close to it there's a fig tree very, very close to it. So do you think that's what's causing the problem?
Well, it could be competing with the lime tree.
So one has to go?
I suppose you would just need, not necessarily, I would definitely heavily mulch and maybe give them a bit more water. Even those trees, I'd use your washing water and that sort of thing on there if you can. Would be a good thing.
As long as you're using a suitable detergent.
Yeah, biodegradable detergent.
Yeah, check the grey water safe ones. If you've got them close together, they are going to be competing. So you would either need to move them, get rid of one, which you may not wish to do, or over supply the demands that they both have so that they're not needing to compete so much, if that makes sense.
Right.
But I wouldn't overfeed the fig. I'd feed away from the fig so that the citrus can get the feed. Because if you overfeed figs nitrogen, they tend to, the fruit's not often that good. It sort of doesn't seem to taste as good.
Thanks, magic workers. We are really your advice. Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And Donna of South Yundurup is after is after a copy of your newsletter. Easy to access, greenlifesoil.com.au.
Yeah.
And if you go to the website, Donna, you can become a member.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very easy website to follow. And your details, you enter your details, and that newsletter will be in your inbox each month. And I do recommend it. It's very worthwhile information for all you gardeners out there as well. Okay, time for a break. We shall return. Curtain Radio. And we're going straight out to the lines. We're in Kudanup. Good morning, Lionel. How are you?
Yeah, very good, thanks.
Go ahead.
Yep. I've got a Washington Navel, a juicing orange. It's not a Valencia. Very heavy cropper. Juice is very easy. A lemon tree, a lime tree. All my citrus reach for the sky. The lowest foliage of any of them would be 7 feet up there, and the top of them would be nearly 20 feet.
Wow.
Wow.
Must make harvest a bit tricky sometimes.
Yeah, yeah.
About 15 years old.
Mm. Oh, great.
So what can I do to... I've cut them down numerous times.
Mm.
And straight away, you'll get a new growth of about 6 foot racing to the sky.
Okay. Do they get sun lower down there, Lionel?
Very little.
That's going to be the reason why. They're just trying to get their allocation of sunlight, really.
Yeah. Does it make any difference when you cut them back? Oh, I can't cut them back till after they've fruited. They've all got fruit on them.
Not really. You want to, as long as they can recover, they're usually be okay. You may lose fruit depending, you know, if you do it while they are fruiting. But,
yeah, you can pretty much, they're pretty hardy. They will recover.
Yeah.
And I know they do send out those really tall shoots super, super fast, but the reason is that they're reaching for the sun.
Why are they so shaded there, Lionel? Is it trees
For the lime and lemon, right on our boundary fence is about a 40-foot huge fig tree, which I've cut everything off that's hanging over my property. But it still shades those two. And the juicing one down the same fence line, that's only got the fence and shrubs on either side of it. So it's just not that shaded. Yeah, it's in the sun right now, most of it. But, yeah, well, I just thought there might have been a correct time to do it because I just seem to do it when I feel like it.
Yeah, it's after fruiting, but, yeah, when it can recover easily, I suppose, is really going to be the...
Well, it doesn't take much, I tell you. As soon as I've cut them back...
Yeah,
very robust.
I'm standing there now, I'm 5'5", say, and I cut them back once at about 7 foot, and I'd say they're at least 10 feet up in the air from where I cut it back last time.
They can grow pretty quick, but it sounds like there's not much you can do about it. So I'd say regular pruning is really all you can do.
Yeah.
And they will be reinvigorated by that pruning process. So, you know, it'll keep the trees.
And maybe have a chat with your neighbour. Is that possible?
The property's just been sold and there's new neighbours in there and I haven't seen them yet.
Yeah,
definitely change that if you can reduce the trees.
Yeah, and anything around that you can trim to just let a little more light in, I think would
be helpful.
Unfortunately, this fig tree, it produces brilliant dark red fruit and they're beautiful.
There you go. Well, that's not so bad if it hangs over the fence.
Even though I've got it cut back off my property, I still stick my ladder right up into her place. Because the previous owner used to encourage me to do it because they didn't know I'm not in their place ate the figs.
Well, if it's such a big tree, they're probably not going to be able to use them all anyway, I would imagine. But, yeah, take them some fig jam and make friends.
Thanks, Lionel. We have to move on.
Okay,
cheers
for
now.
Bye now.
Thank you. And we're talking about frangipani with Annette. Good morning.
Yes, hello. I've just noticed that I've got several frangipanis in pots, but these particular three, they're all in all-day sun, really hot, and I've noticed that the stems are beginning to split at the bottom, and I'm just wondering, perhaps I'm over-watering them.
Well, how much water do they get, Annette?
Well, I usually water them every morning, hand water.
I think you may be overwatering because, from my understanding, they're actually very tough and a good deep watering for a fairly advanced frangio. Did you say they're all in pots or are these ones?
Yes, they're okay. Quite big. They're about, you know, 5 feet, I suppose, tall and big. They're very bushy at the top, very wide.
Canopies.
Yeah.
Are they draining okay, Annette? Like the pots are draining, the water's draining out?
Yeah, I think they are because I've got plenty of good drainage in the pots, actually. It's a, like a really tough soil, not really muddy soil. It's a nice aerated soil. Yeah. Mm, but I think I might be because I've just noticed it's only just started to happen.
Yeah, I think you might be.
Because it's cooled down a little bit, so they maybe just don't have the requirement for so much, you know, so much water.
But because they're in that really hot sun and the pots are black, you know, they get from early morning, they get it until about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and I just thought that they needed the water.
It's a delicate balance. But my suspicions would be that you probably don't need to be giving them a big drink every day.
All right. All right. Perhaps I'll move into a slightly shadier spot.
Yeah, try just cutting it back to every second day, see what you think. But, yeah, my understanding is that they're tougher than they look and they don't necessarily need water every day.
Yeah.
All right. And do you think they'd be all right, like once the leaves fall off and everything, you think you're right to be replanted next year?
Yeah, I'd say
or
so.
Or in the spring?
Yep.
So the splits don't really mean anything much.
Good question.
How big are the splits, Annette?
The splits?
Yeah.
About 5-6 inches.
Oh, so they're reasonable size. Yeah. Good question. I'm sorry, I don't know the answer to that. They are quite robust and quite tough, so I would suggest they should recover. If you're going to be, I'd suggest cut back on the watering and maybe we can do a bit of research into the spring stems.
Yeah, and cut back as it cools down. Definitely. Like just don't water them as much, you know.
Just that long hot summer as I've got into a habit.
Exactly.
All right. We need to wriggle on, Annette. Thank you, love.
Yes, thanks very much.
Okay, bye now. Cheers for that. Now, an event not to be missed. There's a pop-up plant collector sale happening tomorrow, 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. at Andrew's Succulents. Now, that's at 12 Honey Street in Wanneroo. It's being hosted by Goldleaf Greenhouse, and some of you would remember Nikki Waters comes in. She's our indoor plant lady specialist, and she's been on air with us a few times and shared a lot of great information with us. She is the host of this particular pop-up event. You can expect rare, uncommon collector indoor house plants, including cuttings, and some of this amazing stock is being supplied by the Leaf Gallery. And all you crazy aroid collectors out there like me know all about that. Now, there will also be succulents and cactus, carnivorous plants, bromeliads, Hoya, decor pots, and a lot of plant accessories. A lot more going on out there, guys. If you are interested, head to the Goldleaf Greenhouse or Andrew Succulents Facebook pages for exclusive sneak peeks and further information. So this is tomorrow, 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. at Andrew's Succulents, located at 12 Honey Street in Wanneroo. We're chatting to Jim next. Back shortly. Curtain Radio. And we appreciate your company this morning. My special guest doing a stellar job is Paul and Linda Michener from Green Life Soil Co. Straight back out to the lines, we're in East Fremantle. Jim, thanks for waiting.
That's fine.
Okay, go ahead.
Go ahead, yeah. Look, I've got a lime tree. We've had it for 20 years. It's only about 1.5 metres tall. It's always had fruit extremely well. This year the fruiting is dull, but the biggest problem is that all the fine branches which are coming out are being deformed and thickening. What could be causing the thickening of the branches which fruit?
Well, it sounds like you might have the dreaded gall wasp to me. It would be really helpful if you could get some photos and send them in because, we can help you potentially ID that. But unfortunately, that's a sign, and I know mine at home are only just beginning to thicken up now. But that's what it sounds like without seeing it.
Definitely sounds like
sorry.
Out of all those branches right back.
Yeah, that's what you'll need to do.
Once it's been identified.
Once it has, yep.
Okay, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Good luck.
Good on you, Jim.
Thank you.
And I'm going to give away the Bigotry's $75 gift voucher. So get ready. You must be a Curtin FM member and not to have won a prize in the last 28 days, okay? Now, here is the question, another one of John's tricky questions. This one's not so tricky, but you will need your thinking caps on. Here it is. In his song, I Am, I Said, Neil Diamond says, LA's fine, the sun shines most of the time, and the feeling is laid back. What does he then tell us grows there? So here it is. In his song, I Am, I Said, one of my favourite songs, I have to add, Neil Diamond says, LA's fine, the sun shines most of the time, and the feeling is laid back. What does he then tell us grows there? 94841927. Give a Bev a call right now if you'd like to get your hands on that $75 gift voucher from our good buddies at Bigger Trees. Now, I was just going through your newsletter that you put into our inboxes every month, and I had a few more things that I wanted to touch on. I know where time is against us, but we've got a few minutes. Is that okay to hit you guys up with that?
Yeah.
Now, you're saying at the moment, bare-rooted trees, start thinking about when you can get your hands on them, they're good to time to be thinking about planting bare-rooted stock.
Mm-hmm. Well, yep. Winter, it becomes available, so now's the time to think about what
plotting.
You want to grow. Yep.
Yep, and feed your lawns. Mm. Yes.
This is going into
perfect time.
Yeah, as it's cooling down, everything's going to start. It's like our second spring, I suppose, autumn.
Mm.
It's my favourite time for growing veggies, like all sorts of veggies, just get them in. Start planning your garden, what do you want for next year?
Yeah, so autumn is the best time to be doing it.
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely. Watch out for slugs and snails. You've got a little bit of information about that as well. And you've also got about spring flowering annuals. Start to plot what you could be thinking about planting.
Hmm.
Now is the time to get them in.
Well, yeah, particularly if you're after bulbs and things, they'll be all around very short. Well, they are actually now. So now's a good time to think about where you want your bulb displays for spring. It's always lovely when the daffs come up at the end of winter. And, now's the time to think about it.
Really good time to plan. Like plan where the shade is in your garden, where the sun is, where the winds are going to come from.
Yeah.
All that sort of thing. Take that into account.
Yep, save yourself a lot of grief going forward.
Yeah,
now, we do have a winner for the Bigger Trees voucher, Linda of Naranda. Thanks for playing with us this morning. Voucher will find its way to you this week. Let us know what you get up to with it. The question was, in his song, I Am, I Said, Neil Diamond says, LA's fine, the sun shines most of the time, and the feeling is laid back. What does he then tell us grows there? Palm trees. Okay, good on you, Linda. Very, very clever of you. And just for a few minutes, if I can hit on a few more things, may I? And pick your brains. You're talking about nematodes as well. That's a big subject, I know, so you probably can't cover that off in a couple of minutes.
Yeah, nematodes are one of the most numerous creatures on the planet.
Mm. Yeah.
Linda always looks at me and rolls her eyes when I start talking about these sort of things. But it's the nematodes that most people talk about are the root knot nematodes.
Yeah.
And
there's a good picture of it here that I'm looking at.
Yeah.
Yep.
Often towards the end of summer, the soil's been baked. A lot of the biology in the soil has died off. And often root knot nematodes or certain nematodes don't have a great deal to eat. So they start turning towards the roots of plants because it's available. The remedy for that really is to build up the biology back into the soil. So definitely mulch. I can't emphasise mulching enough. Protects the soil from the sun, stops it from drying out, and start feeding the soil. That's why we use kelps and fish products is really good biological food, like bacteria feed on that. Anything really, manures, some people like manures, but compost is one of the best ones. Put that under your mulch, especially for your citrus trees, those sort of things. Put manure, compost, and then put the mulch on top. You don't need a very expensive mulch, just often the best mulches are light in colour, different particle sizes, lets the water get through.
And you're mentioning crop rotation and green manure crops as well?
Yeah, green manure crops are one of the best ways to get the biology into your soil.
How do you do that?
Well, it's
growing anything.
Even
weeds are better than nothing, because as they're learning more and more about soil biology, one of the thought of leaving soil fallow is a very European thing, from where the ground freezes. But where the ground doesn't freeze, you really want to keep soil active and alive, and any plants growing will encourage that soil biology. Without plants, you won't get the microbes and the fungi.
That's right.
In the soil.
It's known that most plants will feed up to the soil. Well, that most biology, as in bacteria and fungi, congregate around the roots of trees or plants. So, and the plants actually feed back about 30% of their sugars back into the soil, roughly, to attract the microbes. So the more you have growing, the more fertile your soil will become. So if you've got mulch on the top, that'll be continually breaking down. And that activity of all the microbes under the mulch just keeps feeding your plants. So that's the symbiotic relationship they kind of have. And, we need to be the catalyst and just keep that happening. Don't leave your soil bare through summer.
Thank you very much. So, guys, if you like the sort of information that Linda and Paul have just, we've just scratched the surface of their monthly newsletter. If you'd like to get involved, jump on their website and register. It's all free, and have this downloaded into your inbox every month. And there's a lot more than even the few things we've touched on. It's very, very in-depth and much appreciated, as is your company this morning. Are you both heading back to work now?
Yes.
We are.
For the rest of the day? Okay. And appreciate very much you coming in, filling in for Ms. Faye Okara. She will be back next week. Thanking Bev Dering and John Glidden, of course. My gardenism for the morning is: plant seeds of happiness, hope, success and love. It will all come back to you in abundance. This is the law of nature. Stay with us for George Minoli up next with the classic 60s, and we do look forward to speaking to you again next Saturday. Look after yourselves, everybody. Thank you for your company. Happy gardening. We hope you've enjoyed listening to another edition of Let's Talk Gardening on Curtin Radio. Happy gardening.